Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. We're going to go to Ireland, and we will catch up with Carrie Toomey, who is the wife of Anthony McIntyre. Anthony McIntyre, and it was indeed the... correct me if I'm wrong here. First of all, good morning to you. Well, it's good morning, New York. Good afternoon to you, Carrie.
Good morning. Good morning. And good afternoon. And thank you for having me today.
Listen, just wanted to check a few things with you. Your husband, Anthony McIntyre, was hired by Boston College to conduct interviews for the Boston College Oral Archives. Is that pretty much it?
Yes. The Boston College contracted Ed Maloney as project director for what they called the Belfast Project, which was meant to be an oral history archive of people that were involved in the Troubles.
Mm-hmm.
It was based on the idea of the Bureau of Military History, where they had also done archived interviews and recorded the history of what went on. And Anthony was hired to conduct the interviews, which he did. He conducted interviews, many hours of interviews with 26 people, and he was hired because, first of all, he has his PhD. His PhD is in the history of the Provisional IRA and formation of it, and he is academically trained, and he is also a former IRA volunteer who did 18 years in Longkesh. He was there while the blanket protest. He was 4 years on the blanket and no wash protest, and he was there during the hunger strikes. And he would have the experience and the knowledge and the training to conduct an oral history, very much in the vein of what we now see being published in the third volume of Ernie O'Malley's oral history of the IRA from the 20s and whatnot. It's an honored tradition that he's falling in.
Mm. The a story, maybe even two stories, carried by the Sunday World tabloid, which is a very indeed popular paper in Ireland, and the Northern edition, they have carried some allegations which you don't agree with, including the fact, you can tell us the fact, but the amount of money paid to Anthony, and then an add-on to that you were being paid as his assistant. Can you straighten that out for us?
Yes. There have been a number of allegations floating both in cyberspace and commentary and specifically published in the Sunday World tabloid about Anthony's role in the project and our safety is very much at risk. Graffiti sprayed up and down the walls of the Falls Road, Boston College touts in former Republicans, and so there's an issue being made of how much money Anthony made or was paid to conduct these interviews, which amounted to $25,000 a year for the length of the project.
That's £25,000.
Not a lot of money. He did not make any money from the book because he had nothing to do with the book. He was not involved in it. He did not make any money from the documentary because he was, again, not involved in it. I was never hired nor worked on the Boston Project, as it's being alleged. Number one, I understood at the time that the project was being conducted the issue of how sensitive the material was, and it was in my own interest safety-wise, to have nothing to do with it, to not know anything about it. And number two, there was never a position anyway, you know. So I never worked on the Boston Project. And I became involved in the campaign to stop the subpoenas, but that's not a paid position. Mm-hmm. I'm not hired by anybody. I'm doing this because I love my husband and I want to protect my family. And so it's just a lot of scary stuff happening. And the Sunday World has, they carried an article laboring Mr. Ivor Bell, an informer, a tout. He's a 77-year-old man that's charged with aiding and abetting. And he's the only person who has been charged in relation to the Boston tape being subpoenaed over, or in the McConville case, I should say. And the article discussed the anger that's felt and the graffiti and named a bunch of people and didn't name people that weren't even involved in the Boston Project and made the allegations of Anthony having tons of money and myself also being employed, all rubbish, all wrong, and all very worrying because obviously it strokes up the hate campaign that's being directed against the people that participated in the project. And I alerted the embassy to the heightened level of threat that we're facing.
Now, okay, we just want to straighten out now. You're American.
Yes.
You have two children who are American citizens. You so the conversation and the area that I would like to address is what appears to be, and obviously it's not so, that you were looking for asylum for your husband, Anthony, in the United States, because that's the thrust of the story in the Sunday World.
Yes, and I have never made a visa application and never discussed asylum with the embassy in the main, because the embassy and my communications with the State Department have made explicitly clear that Anthony will never be allowed into the U.S. There's no point to mm-hmm. make any application on anything because it's not going to happen.
Just tell us why. Just tell us why that is so.
Because he has the conviction for an IRA murder. So in the eyes of the government, he is a terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
And post 9/11 especially, that, you know, he's just not allowed to come in. I've known this for years, so this is not anything new. And I have been very upfront. I even think that we may have discussed it in the previous interviews that we've done, that
mm-hmm.
I have been in contact with the embassy and the consulate and raising this issue, trying to get the subpoena stopped because of the safety issue. And, you know, so that's never been any secret. But the claims that I'm begging for asylum, no, I know that the asylum's not going to happen. It's not on the table. What I am begging for is for the U.S. government to stop facilitating this British grab and criminalization of Irish history because of the danger that it poses to our family. So I had sent them the Sunday World article about Mr. Bell just because I document everything, alerting them to the heightened risk that we're facing, and then later had a phone conversation with the embassy, in which I was very angry.
The embassy, the American embassy in Dublin, or
the American embassy in Dublin, yes, for which we still do not have an ambassador. And I was very angry because I just think that this is a situation that we have 3 years we have spent pointing out exactly where this was going. And 3 years we have wanted an adult to step forward and stop the train wreck. And everybody's passed the buck. Everybody's, you know, nothing has been done that allow it to continue. And I don't want my family or the participants in this project to be the collateral damage for the United States protecting the assets of the British. I'm livid over that. So I had this conversation, and I followed it up with an email that documented the contents of the conversation with the embassy. The conversation was on Wednesday. The email was on Thursday. And on Sunday, the Sunday World tabloid ran with a story that I had been in touch with the U.S. administration that week, that I had begged for asylum, that Anthony was mentally unwell, that I wanted to escape the nightmare, that I had worked for Boston College, again repeating about Anthony's earnings. And, I mean, just a scurrilous piece, and very alarming because of the risk that it poses to the safety, but extremely alarming because it means that my communications with the embassy are compromised, either by surveillance, electronic through the phone, the email, or there's been a serious breach of protocol and illegal privacy violations. And I have asked for a formal, I've asked the State Department for a formal investigation into the matter. I've also lodged a complaint with the Garda, because this is a very serious issue. This is the, if it's not my phone and my email or my family being monitored, this is the U.S. government's communications that are compromised. And this, I think that the Irish government should take this very seriously. Whatever way this works out, this needs investigated. How does this conversation, how does this end up spun in the Sunday World? Because I didn't call the Sunday World, and the Sunday World didn't certainly did not and still have yet to call me.
You've had no communication with them, directly or indirectly.
Pardon?
You have had no communication with the Sunday World at all. Have they tried to talk to you? Have they?
No. They did not. They have not, since they've been running these stories, they have not. Now, I know a fellow that writes for the Sunday World, and I have spoken to him. Mm-hmm. Actually, I've just emailed him asking for a copy of the article, and that's the only contact that I have had. And that was after this. But in terms of the reporter writing this story, the editor, anybody involved in the publication of the story, no, I have not had any contact with the Sunday World whatsoever.
I have not attempted. Yeah. Do you agree, Carrie? Do you agree that it was probably that had it not been for the arrest of Gerry Adams in the lead up to the elections, that there wouldn't be a story here at all?
Oh, I think that the arrest of Adams has definitely contributed to the atmosphere and the interest and the threat that we are living under right now. Yes. And I think that that's why these malicious stories and untrue stories are being peddled around, because of the arrest of Adams in particular. I mean, you and I sat down how many years ago on this issue, basically outlining where it would go if it wasn't stopped. And here we are, where we knew it would end up if it wasn't stopped. We need to make sure, I mean, this is, I think, the greatest act of British vandalization of Irish history in recent times. And they're criminalizing Irish history. And I think that's objectionable, and we should be stopping it. We have the right to tell our history, whatever perspective you're coming from. And it should not be criminalized. And that was always the fight, was to not criminalize history, to resist the subpoena based on the academic confidentiality that historians do not do the work of the police. And it's just how much and how little has changed.
Carrie Toomey, my guest, is the wife of Anthony McIntyre, who conducted the interviews. There are a couple of things that I'd like to sort out. There are rumors and insinuations that your husband, Anthony McIntyre, was not paid directly by Boston College at all, that in fact the project director, you know, Ed Maloney, okay, well, I guess you're answering the question there.
That's the first I've heard that. No.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not true. He was paid by Boston College, and in fact, anybody who has an academic contract will recognize this. Every few months, when the funding runs out and the contract is, you're coming to the end of the contract, and you're like, oh, what are we going to do? And you're counting your pennies, and then the funding, always comes through on the last day, and then you're good for another
right.
6 months. I mean, that was all Boston College. It was
okay.
That's pretty ridiculous. To
okay.
Otherwise.
Now, was there another source of income, for your family? You do have two children, and you do live in Ireland and have lived in Ireland. Was the payment from Boston College, was that pretty much the source of revenue for your household?
Yes, we lived in Belfast at the time, and my children were much younger then. And in fact, I think I only had one child at the start of the project. And I was, and still am, a housewife. One of the benefits that I found as an American living in Ireland was that I could stay home with my children. And the cost of child care, were I to be working, as well as Anthony be working, I would have been paying to work, basically, because it just, as many working mothers know, it's extremely expensive for enough child care to cover your ability to freely work. So we made the decision that I would be a full-time mom and stay at home. Also, the nature of the project itself and the hours that Anthony would be working were not, they weren't a set kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like I knew he would be from 9 to 5 and then I could take an evening job and he could mind the kid. It wouldn't work like that. He could be gone at any time and he could be gone overnight at any time. So
mm-hmm.
I had to be the dedicated home body
okay.
and minding the child, which I did, and nobody paid me for that. I think we may have got child benefit, which, if I remember correctly, but I would honestly have to check, would have been maybe 11 quid a week or something, not a lot of money. And Anthony was the sole breadwinner.
Just to put that in, to put that in perspective, if that was 11 quid, as you say, a week, that amounts to what, about $15? It was minimum.
I don't know. And
okay.
I
doesn't
I
make a
wouldn't
difference
stand over the amount of it, but it wasn't a huge amount of child benefit. I mean,
yeah.
It was...
And as you were entitled to regardless, right? You would
yes.
have gotten it,
yes.
yeah. Okay,
yes.
now...
And I can, I'm entitled to child benefit down here, and that amounts to...
Yeah.
I think $260 a month for the two children.
Right.
And that's my income.
Okay.
So not a lot of money.
Carrie, I do want to ask you a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Southern California.
Okay. And when did you meet Anthony?
Well, I had read a number of articles and letters that he had written in the Andersontown News online, and I had sent him an email because I appreciated his politics. It was a long email, keep your chin up, because
mm-hmm.
I could see he was pushing a very hard road and an isolated road.
You're a pen pal, were you? Were you a pen pal?
No, not... It wasn't really, it was a very short period because I sent him this thing thinking, well, if somebody in Los Angeles is thinking that you're right, then you can't be all that wrong because I understood the principles that he was talking about. He didn't read the email because it was too long.
Okay.
So then they had started the Irish Republican Writers Group and made a website. And there was an email link on the website that didn't work. And I emailed him again and said, by the way, did you know that this link doesn't work? If you need any help with your website, let me know. Because that email was just two lines, he replied.
Yeah.
And we started chit-chatting, just on the politics of things. at that point, I knew that I wanted to come to Ireland. I never wanted to do the two-week tour. I had such an interest in Irish history and recent Irish history that I knew I needed to either come to Ireland and understand it on a day-to-day level, or just get a new hobby and move on in California. Mm. And the work situation opened up where I had the opportunity, and I thought, I don't want to be 60 years old and wondering what if. And so I packed 6 suitcases, and I had a friend in Drogheda who's godmother to my daughter, and she said, I have a spare room, and I came over. I thought, and this was at the time that the immigration was much more lax, I thought, okay, I have 3 months, and if I like it, I'll do what I can to secure legal status, and if I don't, I'll come home and continue on in my career. I was a union organizer at the time.
When did you meet Ed Maloney then, who was hired separately? We have to assume. Correct me on anything I'm saying. But he was hired separately as director of the Boston College Oral Project pertaining to the history of the Troubles. So when did you meet with Ed Maloney?
I would have met him. I remember distinctly the evening that Anthony and I had dinner in his home. But I can't remember exactly
when
it was. But it would have been sometime before the project began, I would think, because he and Anthony had been friends and had known each other for some time. I arrived in 2000. So and the project started in 2001. So I would have met him sometime in the summer. But I didn't have a lot of contact with him.
Yeah.
But he, you know, he was a journalist, and he was somebody that Anthony knew, and that knew Anthony, and they had a friendship. And,
now, what about the Carrie? What about the rumors that say that from the get go that Ed Maloney and your husband Anthony McIntyre had agreed to. Derive income from a book based on the tapes.
I'd really like to know where that that money is.
That's why I'm talking to you. Yeah.
Right now.
Okay.
My husband made no money from any book, and in fact, the one book that my husband did do, his own book. Which was a compilation of essays that he had written for our website, The Blanket. And it was picked up by a small publisher based in New York, Asubo Press. He was paid an advance of $500, which amounted to 250 sterling for that book. And we got our first royalty check because the advance was finally paid off with the sales of, and our first royalty check was $5.
Okay.
That's the money that my husband has made from books. There was no, and at least from our perspective, there was no desire to do any books at the start of the project.
Yeah. Okay.
Because the whole point was the project was to be confidential. The archives were there to be for the future, and the whole thing was the confidentiality and the protection and the secrecy of doing this because of the dangers it posed doing. And we can see those dangers evident today in how many people are outraged that this project was even done. I am strongly of the opinion that the more history, the better. The better we understand history, that we should not be restricted to one viewpoint only of what has occurred. And everybody has the right to tell their history. So I was very supportive of Anthony doing this, but it was never about books or money, or what could be earned from it. It was about the ability to put voices to the record, and that was what was important to my husband.
Now, of the interviews which your husband, Anthony McIntyre, conducted. To what degree we're talking about were most or all of those interviews strictly with the nationalists, those who were involved in the IRA, or were there others?
Well, the archive itself it was meant to expand as it went along, okay? And it started with Anthony doing the interviews with the Republicans, and then another researcher, interviewer, Wilson MacArthur, was brought along to do the same thing in the loyalist community. And
was there any communication, for instance, with Anthony and the other interviewer? Were there
would be in terms of organizational communication.
Okay.
I.e., here's Tom Hatchie and Bob O'Neill coming over from Ireland. Everybody needs to meet and discuss the project, not in terms of discuss the contents of the interviews or who was being interviewed, but in terms of where's the funding at, are the contracts being renewed, how's the procedure for the transport of the archives, you know, organizational matters.
Mm-hmm.
But Anthony would have no idea and nothing to do with what Wilson's work was, and Wilson would likewise have had no idea or nothing to do with what Anthony was doing. And I want to also point out, in terms of the confidentiality of the project and how paramount it was and how much it was believed at the time of the project that the confidentiality guarantee was there, is that my husband was one of the people who himself was interviewed. Now, he didn't interview himself. He was interviewed by an academic. But he would not expose anybody that he was asking to also participate in the archive to any risk that he himself did not expose himself to. So he also contributed his history and his oral history archive to the archive. And that really, I think, says it all in terms of the belief at the start of this project was.
Carrie, we're running out of time. I want to thank you for joining us this morning and indeed straightening out some of the confusing reports that we get. So now
I appreciate your having me, and I am always willing to speak to anybody, and if the Irish Voice or the Irish Echo, I've spoken with Ray before, anybody has any questions on anything, I am more than happy to clarify. We don't have to agree on any of the politics, but the facts are easy to ascertain, and I'm quite happy to help and assist in any way that I can. And we do have the Boston College subpoena .wordpress.com, or if you search for Boston College subpoena news, I update it regularly. It has everything, contracts, court documents.
Okay.
The recent, sorry, I don't want to go on, but we're available. And
very good. Okay, we're going to leave it at that. Carrie Toomey, thank you for joining us on Irish Radio Network USA. And friends, you are listening to Irish Radio Network. And our guest there, Carrie Toomey.